Good morning, everyone, and thank you for your time and interest, and welcome to this general stakeholder session on ISO System Transmission Project Criteria. My name is Ata Raymond, and I'm the Director of Grid Planning and Operations Engineering at the ISO. For the next couple of hours, we're going to provide a bit of a background on ISO's role in transmission planning or transmission planning processes, and share details on system transmission project criteria and its applications under different situations. This is in response to the AEC direction to engage the DFOs and other industry stakeholders on ISO's criteria for the initiation of system transmission projects, including the criteria, if any, for determining gray area system projects. Before we go into the agenda items and its details, I'd like to introduce my ISO colleagues who will be helping me in this session. They are Dennis Frelick, Vice President, Grid Reliability; Rob Davidson, Director, Customer Grid Access; Peter Huang, Manager, System Planning; Leanne Kerr, Team Lead, Tariff Operations; Craig Killoran, Program Manager, Customer Connections; Jennifer Volmer, Communications and Stakeholder Relations; and Joseph Kruger, Regulatory Analyst. Just for everybody's information, for transparency's sake, this session is being recorded in accordance with Section 33C of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. At this point, I'll hand it over to Jennifer for a quick Zoom introduction notice for participants. Over to you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Ada. So I know we've all done this many times, but just a quick refresher. So for webinar attendees, you will have the ability for audio. So I'll be able to unmute you. You won't have access to share your video. That will just be the panelists. We will have both Q&A written and where you can raise your hand. Obviously, we prefer that you raise your hand and share your questions so that any clarifications can be made there. So if you raise your hand, I'll be notified that you'd like to ask a question and I'll unmute you. You will need to in turn unmute your microphone on your end. Your name will appear on the screen, but your camera will be off. And then following your question, if you can please lower your hand. Alternatively, you can also type in your Q&A in the Q&A box, and I will read those out for the panelists to respond to. And if you're joining us by the conference call line, you can hit *9 and you can raise your hand, and the microphone is unmuted by using *6. Additionally, I'll be sharing a poll at the end of the session, just a quick 3-question poll for your feedback on the session. So we'd greatly appreciate your comments there. And I think that's it. The only other thing is just if you raise your hand or you're sharing a question, if you can just please identify yourself and your company, that would be very helpful. And I think that's it. Back over to you, Ada.
Thank you, Jennifer. Can we kindly go to the, yeah. So we appreciate your participation and valuable contributions to this work. The good engagement framework principles shown on the slide have been developed to guide and improve our engagement and allow us to meet the stakeholders' needs and interests in a consistent, transparent, and meaningful manner. Next slide, please. So the agenda for today's session is shown on this slide. Before I hand it over to Peter, I just wanted to let everybody know that there'll be plenty of opportunities for Q&A during different parts of the discussion. So we're showing the Q&A at the end, but there will be opportunities during the presentation to ask questions. With that brief introduction, I'll hand it over to Peter. Over to you, Peter.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ada, for the introduction. And as Ada mentioned, there will be plenty of opportunity to where we will take a pause and take your questions. We'll do that at the end of the background session, as well as at the end of each criteria. So if you do have any item, any question you'd like to raise, please feel free to raise them during those pause timeframe for Q&A. So to get the session started today, Ada has already mentioned that we're here to engage with all of you on ISO's criteria for the initiation of system transmission project. This work all started through an AUC's decision related to ISO's 2018 tariff, where in that specific decision, the commission directed the ISO to work with DFOs to develop an objective set of criteria for the initiation of system transmission projects, reflecting the commission's finding in that decision. So even though the direction from the commission is to work with the DFOs, however, given the interconnected nature of system transmission projects, at the ISO, we really believe there is tremendous value to engage with a broader range of stakeholders in the industry. As such, we actually scheduled three different stakeholder sessions to present and discuss the criteria. We already had two sessions roughly 2 weeks ago on September the 28th. One of the sessions on the 28th was with the TFOs and DFOs, and that was in the morning. And there was a second one in the afternoon of the 28th with the ratepayer groups. So today we are having the third and final session with all of you in attendance today. Our intention is that following the stakeholder engagement sessions and after receiving your feedback, the ISO will consider them carefully and will be filing a report with the commission to demonstrate our full compliance with its directions. So the session today really is intended to provide everyone with the opportunity to ask questions, seek clarifications, as well as understand the ISO's criteria for system transmission project and how we apply the criteria. The focus is, of course, on the details and application of the criteria. And the session is not intended as an opportunity to discuss any other ISO businesses, practice, or initiatives. That means that it's not the intent of this session to cover anything related to ISO tariff or to discuss any project-specific details that you may be engaged with. Following today's session, the ISO will be seeking your feedback on key questions through a comment matrix format. Currently, the comment matrix is being posted on ISO website and it should be ready by the end of the session. And in the comment matrix, we're seeking your feedback on the following four questions. And you'll be greatly appreciated if you can spend a little bit of effort today during the session to think about these four questions. So the questions are, did the session help you understand the criteria? Are there any potential challenges, barriers, or risks presented by the criteria? Are there any outstanding gray areas that need to be clarified? And last one, based on all of the above, would you suggest any adjustments to the criteria? Next slide, please. So here's a quick outline of our approach in developing these criteria and the engagement session today. So the purpose is to clarify and present the criteria to all the stakeholders. And our intent is to apply these clarified criteria on a go-forward basis. In today's session, we'll be providing examples to illustrate how we intend to apply these criteria. However, as we cannot predict what the future cases could look like, our intent is to apply the criteria on a case-by-case basis. Together with the ISO tariff and the legislation, it is our view that the criteria provides the ISO with all the necessary framework to address and manage gray area as indicated in the commission's decision. Next slide. So we're going into a few slides on background to give you the necessary information to get us started on the three criteria we will present later on. So the first one is really on ISO's role in transmission planning, where by legislation, ISO received a planning mandate where we are required to plan a reliable transmission system. And the mandates require the ISO to provide a 20-year long-term transmission plan every 2 years. As part of the planning mandate, the ISO is required to identify any potential future transmission projects that are needed to meet reliability obligations, including the congestion requirements specified in the transmission regulation. The ISO is also required to enable generation and load connections, as well as to enable efficiencies on the system. The three bullets that's shown here is really the core of the planning mandate of the ISO. And the ISO completes and meet that mandate by facilitating approval and triggering of these needed transmission projects through the submission of a need identification document to the commission for its approval. Now, in the next slide, we're going to show a high-level process for the transmission system planning and development. So everything starts on the left, on the red boxes, where those are the need drivers, and they really reflect the planning mandates that were shown in the previous slide. The ISO receive additional information related to the long-term load and generation forecast and uses a sophisticated internal transmission model to perform system studies to identify potential need, to protect the nature of those potential needs, as well as the timing of those needs. That's the need assessment stage shown in green. After certain needs are identified, the ISO then go ahead and develop and screen a number of potential transmission alternatives that can help meet the need that's identified in the need assessment stage. Ultimately, the ISO evaluates all these potential alternatives and choose a recommended preferred alternative based on their technical merits, based on the economic value, as well as environmental and land use impact, taking all the consideration that's shown on the screen. And ultimately, at the conclusion of that, there is a preferred transmission alternative in which the ISO submit a need identification document in front of the commission to seek its approval. That completes the system planning process here at the ISO. Going to the next slide, generally speaking, all the transmission projects can be put into two different categories. Here's the first one, which is system transmission projects. These are the projects that are initiated by the ISO on the basis of an ISO-identified need for transmission expansion and enhancement in order to serve future load and generation. Another type of project is the connection project. So connection projects are those required to respond to a market participant's request to connect to the transmission system. Between the two different type of projects, the system transmission project costs are recovered directly from DTS ratepayers in accordance with the ISO tariff. For connection projects, the same ISO tariff requires the ISO to classify the cost of the connection projects into either system-related costs or participant-related costs. The system-related costs are these costs are recovered similar to system transmission project from low ratepayers. For participant-related costs, the majority of it are recovered through an upfront contribution payment from the market participant who submitted the SASR, and specifically for low connection projects, a small portion of ISO investment that is recovered over time from the overall low ratepayers. So overall, between the two types of projects, the ISO is required to provide cost classification for connection projects, while system transmission project, or system project in short, are the cost of these projects are recovered through low ratepayers. So this is the conclusion of the background session of the presentation, and I'm going to take a quick pause here for about 5 to 10 minutes. If you have any questions, this is definitely an opportunity to refresh and understand all the backgrounds and the purpose that we have covered today before we launch into the three criteria.
So feel free to raise your hand if you have any questions, and I'll unmute you. Or you can type it into the Q&A box if there's anything.
Okay, given this is the first one, we'll probably take a little bit longer just in case people are still warming up and getting ready to raise their hands. Okay, if there's no question, we'll be starting with the three criteria. And again, just to let everyone know that we'll be taking a brief pause at the end of each criteria so that you can quickly recap and raise your questions so we can have a thorough discussion to make sure you have proper and enough time to fully understand the criteria that we are presenting today. Okay. In that situation, let's go to criteria number one. So really, criteria number one is at the core of allowing the ISO to meet its planning mandate. In the sense that in here, whenever there is an observed transmission regulation or reliability criteria violation, this really gives the ISO the opportunity to investigate the situation and initiate a system project to ensure the transmission system remain reliable. This is speaking to ISO's mandate of providing a reliable transmission system, as the ISO is required to follow different legislative requirements and a number of reliability standards so that we can plan the transmission system to meet ISO's forecasted conditions. And when we are speaking about reliability criteria violation, what we're really referring to are the M-0 violations for generation-driven needs, and M-0 and M-1 violations for any load-driven needs. So what, for example, during the ISO's LTP process, it would identify a number of needs based on the planning process that was shown in the previous slide. In that situation, the ISO would typically perform a project prioritization process to identify which system needs to be addressed quickly. What the ISO would intend to do is to address those needs that are more urgent, that are more severe, while we'll put a lower priority for those needs and violation that are more marginal in nature. So outside of the two-year LTP cycle, the ISO also continuously monitors the system and in certain occasions may identify other urgent needs outside of the LTP cycle. In that specific situation, if the ISO believes the need is near term and urgent, we may choose to advance that particular need as a system project. However, even in that situation, criteria number one will be observed to ensure that we have a good foundation to start a transmission system project. And to recap, criteria number one here is really to give ISO the necessary tool to ensure the overall reliability of the transmission system. Okay, we have a couple examples prepared for criteria number one. The first one is related to generation, and the second one in the next page is related to load. So let's take a few minutes to understand the picture and to explain how in this situation the ISO intend to call upon criteria number one to initiate a system project. So in this situation, what we have is a 130 kV network where substation A is connected to a load pocket to the left, while substation C is connected to a generation pocket, 130 kV pocket to the right. And between these two 130 kV pockets, there's a single transmission line linking substation A and substation C through substation B. As there are more and more generation develop in the 138 kV pocket to the right near substation C, the flow from substation C to substation A will continue to increase as those generations develop. At a certain point, there is an N-0 thermal overload observed on the transmission line between substation C and substation B due to the higher flow coming out of the generators that are being connected to the right. In that situation, there's an observed N-0 criteria violation, and the ISO will go away and investigate the need and potential solutions. After that investigation, the ISO determined that the best way to mitigate the situation is by constructing a new 130 kV line between substation C and substation B, as indicated by the shaded area at the bottom of the diagram. In that situation, the ISO will initiate the scope of that transmission construction as a system transmission project in order to address the N-0 thermal violation observed. Now, going into the next example of criteria number one, this is a more complex situation, so let's take a few moments to understand the situation and the single line diagram. So what you're seeing on the screen is a 130 kV network that's depicted in green in the picture above, where that 130 kV network have two primary load substations, that's substation B and C. They are load substation that's meant to supply local load. And that pocket there is supplied through a pair of 130 kV transmission lines from substation A to the left. To the right of substation C, there is also a normally open 130 kV line shown in the dotted orange line that connects substation C to the 240 kV network starting from substation D. However, that 130 kV line is operated normally open, as by closing those lines, it actually result in unacceptable flow overloading local lines. And that specific transmission line on its own is unable to supply the full load at substation C during normal conditions. As such, it's being operated normally open. And all the loads from B and C are primarily supplied from the left through that pair of 130 kV lines. As the load continues to grow for substation B and C, at a certain point of load growth, the ISO anticipate an N-1 thermal overload on that pair of transmission lines between A and B when one of those two is out of service. The remaining one will overload. In that situation, we are observing an N-1 criteria violation, and as such, the ISO developed the best and most efficient transmission solution to address the overload by constructing a brand new 130 kV line between substation E and substation C, as shown in the bottom of the diagram in the shaded area. At the same time, with the construction of the new transmission line, it allows the ISO to close the normally open transmission line between C and D and change that normally open point to the new location as shown in the dotted line at the bottom of the diagram. This way, the load at substation C is now supplied primarily from the 240 kV network to the right. And that by doing so, it provides relief to the pair of transmission lines between substation A and substation B. Under this situation, then the ISO will initiate a shaded scope as a system project under criteria number one, as the construction of that transmission line allowed the ISO to mitigate a N-1 reliability violation due to load. So here is another opportunity. We will take a pause at the end of criteria one. And if you do have any questions, this is definitely the opportunity to raise your hand and ask your question.
Hey, we've got a question from Jim Rippon. I'll just unmute you if you can unmute on your side as well.
Hi, Jim.
Oh, his mic isn't working. Okay, we'll just type, if you're able to type in your question, I can read it on your behalf. Jim, do you want to type your question into the Q&A box? Perfect.
Okay. While Jim is typing out his question, I also see another question in the chat box from Richard Penn. So I'm going to read out a question. The question from Richard is, why not put in RAS schemes rather than build transmission? Wouldn't it be cheaper? Thank you, Richard, for your question. So for this situation, that the ISO is required to plan according to the planning criteria specified. And the primary one that we use is what's called the TPO planning criteria. Under that situation, the TPO's planning criteria only allow load loss under very specific, N-1 load loss under a very specific situation. And in this particular picture that we're seeing on the screen, if we use a RAS scheme to trip load after N-1 contingency, that's actually in violation of our planning criteria. As such, the ISO must find a solution that meets our reliability planning criteria, and the solution is, in this situation, is likely what we have shown at the bottom of the diagram. I hope that answers your question, Richard.
Peter, if I may add, our planning criteria and the TPL standards that are followed in Alberta are pretty much in line with the North American TPL, the NERC version. So it is a kind of a universal standard all across North America.
Yeah. Thank you, Lara, for the addition.
Okay, there's a question in the Q&A from Dan Levson. He says, has this presentation changed from the prior presentations? The answer to that, Dan, is no. This is similar presentation that you saw at our session. Richard, maybe just an add-on to the last one. He's sharing that others put in RAS schemes. Mm-hmm. Do you have a response for that?
Yeah, for sure, Richard. Under specific situations, RAS scheme will be allowed. But in many situations where we want to plan according to the North American standard, where a load loss is not permitted, then in that situation, similar to every other jurisdiction, the ISO will be proposing a transmission bill in order to provide that reliable supply to the load pocket.
Perfect. Thank you. And it looks like Jim was able to get his question into the Q&A box or into the chat box. So I'll just read that one out. He shares, in this example, I assume closing the N0 CD line is insufficient to meet the load at sub C. That is why the additional line CE is needed. What happens in the N-1 loss of CE line case? Wouldn't line CD still overload?
That's great. Thank you, Jim, for digging into the details. So the picture that we're showing here is the situation where the normal rating of C and D is unable to carry the full load of substation C on its own. However, a certain transmission line may come with emergency rating where it allows the system operators to provide other operational measures subsequent to the contingencies to ensure that load is not lost after a single contingency. And in this situation, even though CD alone is not able to carry the full load of C, there is still and remain a backup solution, and that's the line between B and C, where it could potentially be switched in with certain switching configuration to allow for additional supply to substation C and ensure that no load is lost under a minus one contingency. I hope that answers your question. So there are some details involved in here, and I hope that sort of covers that, even though the main objective is to show that a solution is needed and can be developed and will be categorized as a system project to address N minus one reliability overload.
Thanks, Peter. It looks like Richard has another comment here. I'm not sure if there's a question you would like to include in this, Richard, but you say you cut LSSI. So is there an additional question or anything you guys want to share with that?
Sorry. I can respond to that. You cut LSSI.
Okay. So I'm assuming, Richard, you're referring to using, so under M-1, you utilize LSSI to reduce load. Please jump in anytime.
Go ahead.
But LSSI is a product that's specifically designed to address intertie import need conditions. It's not meant to be used as a general tool to resolve local area transmission constraints.
I think that's a great answer. It's an appropriate answer.
Thank you, Richard, for your question and comment.
Okay, it looks like that's it from my side right now. Let's see here.
Okay.
Richard, one more here. He's saying it is the same thing whether on intertie or internal.
Let me read the question first.
Yeah.
Is it? No, as Peter mentioned, Richard, it's not the same thing. This example that we are showing on the screen is very location specific. And LSSI is, as Peter mentioned, is used to support imports, and it is there to address the frequency decline, which is a universal phenomena, which is a universal parameter. Whereas this particular example or the overloads on the transmission networks are very location specific. Uh-huh. We need to address that through measures, planning measures, in that region, in that location, as Peter has just mentioned.
Hope this clarifies
your comment.
Maybe I'll just tag on two things there, Richard. First, as it relates to RASs and RASing firm load in the province under N-1 contingencies, as Ada and Peter indicated, that is against our planning criteria, which is pretty standard for North America. Obviously, there are many contingencies on our power system every year. And for each of those contingencies, we were prepared to trip load off under each of those contingencies. Alberta customers would experience a much lower reliability across the province as a result of that change in standard and practice, including industrial customers. And so this is not new as to this planning criteria of not dumping customers for N-1 contingencies. Now, as Peter mentioned, there are some very unique situations where that's acceptable, but it's not a common practice that we will implement here in Alberta. As it maybe relates to your question of LSSI, what Ada and Peter are referring to is the constraint is very local. And so LSSI is a broad system frequency response. And so it's contracted for that purpose. Now, in the future, if we have the capability to apply non-wires alternatives for this type of situation, that might be what you're referring to, in that we could potentially see if we could contract load in that specific location or region to drop off under contingency and pay them a contract for that service to potentially defer infrastructure. That's something that we can potentially look at in the future if the TREG allows us to have a little more flexibility in that space. But again, that's very local, and we would have to contract with some very few parties, which doesn't make it overly competitive because they know they're the players involved. So I'm not sure if that answered your question more fully, but I thought I'd just provide that context quick.
Perfect. That was my question, Horst. It looks like you typed in another question, and Dennis answered that one exactly as well. So thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. Okay. I'm assuming there are more. Are there any more questions, Jennifer?
I think Richard just had one more comment. He just said you could put a load on DOS in the area and that would be cheaper than TX. So just a little feedback he's sharing there.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Okay. With that, this is probably a good opportunity to go to criteria number two. Okay. Now, for criteria number two, you can really think about it as an extension of criteria number one, in the sense that it needs to start with a violation, a criteria violation on the system. And then during the course of investigating that violation, working with the TFO, it comes to ISO's attention where specific transmission facilities are reaching end of life. In that situation, it really provides an opportunity for the ISO to investigate the potential benefit of a reconfigured system that has an overall, that result in an overall benefit to the whole system. And that way we have the opportunity to optimize system need together with the end of life asset need. So the thought here is that the timing of the two needs must be relatively close together or coincide for the ISO to take advantage of the situation. And the situation would lead to a system benefit that could include having the reconfiguration as a lower cost option compared to the like-for-like replacement of the end-of-life asset, or the new reconfiguration can help reduce the environmental and land use impact in that specific area. Or lastly, the reconfigured system solution in order to meet the end of life need is actually a full solution to address the system needs that's previously identified. So overall, this is criteria number two is an opportunity for the ISO to promote system efficiency by looking at two different needs together at the same time and providing an optimized solution to address both needs. So if you go to the example single line diagram, so what you're seeing on the left of the picture is a 130 kV line between substation B and substation A, where the transmission line A and B reaches end of life. This information was brought to ISO's attention while the ISO is investigating the construction of a brand new 240 kV lines in the vicinity of substation B and A. And that proposed development is shown on the right, where as the dotted line in the middle, as a separate system project, the ISO was investigating to connect substation C and substation E. In that situation, it gives the ISO and the TFO the opportunity to investigate, instead of replacing the line between B and A as a like-for-like nature by rebuilding the whole line, the ISO looked into the situation where we can potentially construct a new substation D, tapping onto the proposed 240 kV development, and shorten the line from B to A to just B to D. In that situation, assuming the cost of that development is lower than the like-for-like replacement, this particular solution can also provide a benefit of a shorter transmission line. Overall, it's deemed as a more efficient solution compared to the like-for-like replacement alternative, and then in that situation, the ISO will initiate the scope covered by the shaded area as a system project under criteria number 2. So that really gives the ISO the opportunity to provide an overall optimized efficient solution to meet the need of both existing system need as well as the end of life need. So again, this is the end of criteria number 2 discussion. I'll take a quick pause here for any questions.
Looks like there's a question in the Q&A for you guys from Jim Rippon. Is there a direction or guidance regarding the definition of end of life?
Regarding the definition of end of life. Oh, that's a great question, Jim. And this is the situation where we will rely on the TFO for TFO's expertise. As the asset owner, TFO is definitely, you are in the best situation to determine the status of that particular transmission facility. So from the ISO's point of view, we rely on your expertise and provide that information. So there won't we do not anticipate having specific guidance on how to define end of life. I'm very sure that there is a really strong discipline out there in the industry where there are opportunity for experts to get together and identify what constitutes end of life. And we will need to rely on TFO's expertise on that. Thank you, Jim.
No other questions and no hands raised at the moment, Peter.
Okay. In that situation, let's go to criteria number 3 then. Thank you, Jennifer. Okay. So criteria number 3 is somewhat different from criteria number 1 and number 2 in the sense that in this situation, there is no reliability criteria violation to begin with. What criteria number 3 does is it allows the ISO to optimize the transmission system for better efficiencies when the situation arises. And this better efficiency could include lower overall cost or improved system performance. And in this situation, if the ISO identified these opportunities, it's up to the ISO to demonstrate the benefit and propose a transmission system project under criteria number 3. So probably it's easier to use an example to discuss this situation. So what we're seeing on the screen here is part of the AIES, where on the top you have a 500 kV network, and at the bottom you have the 240 kV network. The two different voltage classes are linked together as substation A and substation B through a pair of transformers. Within the 240 kV system, there are a number of large generators connected. And under norm N-0 and N-1 conditions, there's no criteria violations at all under all operating conditions. However, when maintenance outage required, we are looking at M-1 situation. Then in that situation, then thermal overload will be observed on the 240 kV system, requiring the curtailment or constraint of generators dispatch in that particular part of the 240 kV network. At the same time, when that situation happens, there are spare capacities on the 500 kV system to carry flows between substation A and substation B. In that situation, the ISO may investigate and determine that by installing a new phase shifting transformer at substation A, as shown on the diagram, which is with its main purpose of encouraging power to flow from the 240 kV system onto the 500 kV system to take advantage of the spare capacity on the 500 kV system, that particular solution can allow for the reduction or the elimination of generation curtailment under that specific N-1-1 situation. And if the value of that installation is higher than the curtailment that's to be incurred on the system over a long period of time, then the ISO would demonstrate that as a benefit and initiate a system transmission project under criteria number 3 in order to optimize the system by using the phase shifting transformer in this situation. And this is how criteria number 3 will be used by the ISO. And I also want to highlight the fact that even though the opportunity do exist on our system, this is definitely not, we are not anticipating this situation to occur very frequently. However, when the ISO come across an opportunity like this, it is our mandate to make sure that we enable efficiencies on the system. Okay, that's the end of criteria number 3 discussion. So again, I'll take a pause and take any questions.
Peter, no questions at this point, and no raised hands.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. In that situation, maybe we can go to the next slide.
Oh. I spoke too soon.
Okay. Take some time to type, right?
Yeah, it does. So we have one from Luis Pando. His question is, what criteria applies when an original NID that was driven by load and then is amended to accommodate a new generation project in the area?
Can you repeat that question again, Jennifer, please?
What criteria applies when an original NID that was driven by load and then is amended to accommodate a new generation project in the area?
So, Luis, maybe I'll take that. It will depend on what type of need or what's the nature of the need. I mean, if we were already seeing an overload or a criteria violation because of the load growth, then criteria 1 will apply, and we'll have to see if when the new generation comes into the area and it's sufficiently certain it's moving forward to connect, and if it's the same overload or if it's a different overload. So probably criteria 1 will definitely will apply, and then there could be instances where we will criteria 3 may come into play. It depends on the nature of the need, as Peter mentioned in his background discussion. We need to fully understand what is the driver or what is the nature of the issue that we are seeing, and then come up with a plan accordingly. So it will depend on the situation. But most likely, the example that you've shown, most likely the criteria number 1 will apply.
Yeah, I would definitely agree and echo Adha's response. If there's a generation need, for example, in your example, then that implies, my understanding is that means there's a criteria violation. And in that situation, it's mostly criteria number 1 that will apply. Yes.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. So there is an additional question from Larry Shaven. His question is, how does this criterion relate to the ISO's policy of treating all loop transmission developments as system?
That's a wonderful question, Larry. Thank you so much. So what we are trying to see is that we want to relate the criteria to our planning practice. And that's the intent of showing the 3 criteria here. What we want to say is that instead of looking at how the system is configured, we want to look at what's driving the need. So if there is a N-0 violation for anything that's related to generation, or N-0 and N-1 violation that's driven by load need, then in that situation, we will look at it and then see that as a system need and hence a system project. So what I'm trying to say is the fact that it's the need that matters and that drives the ISO's classification of system project. And in that situation, we will look through the three criteria. And if it meets one of the three criteria, then we will start that as a system project. That's a long answer to you to your question, Larry, but hopefully that addresses your question.
Perfect, thank you, Peter. No other open questions in there right now and no hands raised.
Okay, thank you, Craig. I guess we're going to the additional example now. Okay, so I just want to emphasize that the three criteria we discussed above really give ISO opportunity to start the system project. And the example we're going to cover here is related to connection project. And we're going to demonstrate that by showing you a very classic example of gray area. So that's going to the discussion here. In the next slide. Thank you. So this is where the ISO receives multiple SASRs from multiple market participants in the same vicinity that has high growth potential. And in that very specific situation, they give the ISO the opportunity to investigate the benefit of a overall coordinated connection facilities versus a multitude of individual connection development as proposed by the individual projects. So for example, instead of multiple lines, the construction and the siting of a new collector system or a new collector substation close to all the developments could be implemented to more efficiently accommodate all the SASRs in that particular area. So the condition for the ISO to step in and look for a coordinated connection approach is the situation that the development, the coordinated development, must be a better overall solution than the individual connection solutions that's the originally proposed. So perhaps it's easier to go through this discussion using using an example and diagram. So here is a single line showing a situation where there are three generators that are proposing to be developed in a very specific area of the province. And all three of them propose their individual dedicated radio transmission lines to connect to the nearest substation, which is substation A. In this situation, the original configuration without any coordination is going to result in three different transmission lines running from the same area to another specific location on the transmission system. With the three developments coming in approximately at the same time, the ISO sees an opportunity to provide a coordinated configuration as shown on the right of the diagram, where a single transmission line can be extended from the existing 240 kV network, and a new substation C, the collector substation, can be constructed so that it provides a much shorter connection location for the three generators that are proposing to develop. In that situation, the shaded area will be considered the coordinated connection facilities, and the ISO will look to step in and provide that efficient solution on the condition that it is more efficient and likely lower cost for the system as a whole. And that shaded area will be proposed as a coordinated connection facility, not a system project. I just want to clarify that. But this is where the ISO sees an opportunity to step in and enable efficiency on the transmission system. Okay, that's the end of this section of that's the end of the presentation. I hope that's really helpful for you to understand some of the examples. And at this time, we are definitely open to answer any of your questions.
We've got a couple of questions coming in here. The first one being from Aaron Krush. His question is, what happens to the generator that causes the N minus zero violation?
Okay. perhaps let me use this the last diagram as an example. So let's say let's focus on the diagram to the left. So let's say the first generator that comes in connects to substation A, and it causes M minus zero violations south of section A. That's the 240 kV double circuit lines going from substation A running south. So in that situation, this is part of the existing transmission network. Then that under that situation, an M minus zero violation will be identified. That means it's within the ISO's responsibility to propose a system solution to resolve the M minus zero violations south of section A. And then in that situation, that will be criteria number one, and a solution will be proposed to mitigate that M minus zero violation as a system project.
Perfect, thank you, Peter. We have a follow-up question here from Erica Goddard. She's asking, is there an example of where the ISO has completed these coordinated connection facilities, or has this not yet been tested?
Okay, that's a great question. So without going into specific, which is what we provided at the beginning of the framework, yes, the ISO has looked at a number of opportunities of providing such coordinated connection facilities. This happens as a regular course of business as we receive SASRs from the market participants. And this has happened in the past, and this continues to happen as part of our coordinated approach within the ISO to look at system development together with connection projects, providing connection access. If there are any other additional comments from others, I definitely would appreciate it as well.
So Peter, but as you mentioned in the early part of the presentation that this, all these criteria and proposals are forward-looking. So as we go forward, this will be our approach as we tackle different planning situations, different planning challenges.
Thank you, Ada. And I think we have a hand raised from Ed here. I'm just going to unmute you, Ed, if you can unmute on your side.
Okay, thank you. Just about the coordinated approach here, the trick always seems to be that how do you get three parties to agree to commit at the same time to participate in this development? And if not, then you could end up with one party footing the whole bill for the development. So how does the ISO plan to address that issue?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Ed. So this is certainly something that we have experienced in the past. We understand that's usually a major challenge for each individual developers and market participant. In that situation, it's ISO's role as a central planner to coordinate and step in and provide the most efficient solution. And I would say that the ISO is not afraid of initiating such approach and trying to get the three developers to come together, even though that's a challenge. So it's ISO's intention to look at the overall cost of the coordinated connection facility and have that split likely in a proportional way for the three generators in this example here, so that each one of them will foot a portion of the bill that's proportional to their original connection facilities. In that situation, if usually the overall cost of the coordinated connection facility is a lower cost solution, and that means for each individual market participant, the connection cost of the new coordinated approach is likely going to be lower than the original cost. And with that understanding and interest, that's definitely a tool the ISO can use to encourage more collaborations between multiple parties in order to benefit the system as a whole.
Oh, I agree with you. It's just, you know, it's always difficult to get three parties to agree at the same time to share the cost. So, you know, in that situation, if you end up with two parties canceling and one party going ahead, then you have a less cost-effective solution. for what actually gets connected. So in theory, you know, it's a good solution, but in practice, it's pretty difficult.
Ed, we do recognize a challenge here, and as Peter mentioned, so we'll look at all the aspects. For example, sufficient certainty of generation, the future prospects of this area developing further. We will not, of course, move forward with this plan if there's only one or two proposed applications that can disappear. We will ensure that this plan is workable before we move forward with this. And looking at sufficient certainties, milestones, and the potential for future development will definitely come into consideration.
Would the ISO systemize the cost and then, you know, as people connect, charge them per megawatt or something like that as a way to facilitate this?
I mean, that's not a preferred way, but if we have to address the timing, we may consider that as well. If the timing is off by a very small, short period of time, but the preferred way is to just coordinate and let the customers pick up the tab.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ed. We have another hand raised from Horst. Horst, I'm going to unmute your mic if you can go ahead with your question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Excellent. So if we could go back to the previous example where you explained around criteria three, on this one, how would the ISO make an assessment that this is actually just an optimization? Because the way I understood the example was that under N-1, you have generation curtailment, and there is a criteria in the TREG with regard to an uncongested system under abnormal conditions has to be something like 95%, I think is the criteria. How does the ISO determine whether this is actually in excess of the 95% or is it a pure optimization? So that is the first part of the question. And I have a second part maybe after this one.
Sure, Horace. Thank you for your question. So in terms of N-0, so that's under the transmission regulation where we are required to meet 100% of the time of emir to enable emir energy. So in that situation, it's very clear and simple to understand. Under N-1 situation, of course, that's where the 95% comes into play. And the ISO has gotten more sophisticated over the past few years. And we have the ability to carry out an hourly simulation that allow us to identify the probability of constraint on the system. So in that situation, we do have the opportunity to identify and classify a violation if it's meeting our criteria or not. So that's how we would distinguish between criteria number one, which is a reliability criteria violation, and criteria number three, which is a general optimization situation.
And so actually follow up on this one. Is there some kind of transparent view, or is it documented somehow how the ISO is doing this? Because is it, for example, system-wide 95%, or is it like generator-specific? Like if these generators here are curtailed 10% of the time, that would give them a 90% kind of threshold, which wouldn't meet it, but maybe system-wide you're still in excess of 95%. So is there some documentation where we can, or that we can look at how the ISO is doing this now?
So, before we answer that question, I mean, we'll also look at the bigger picture here. I mean, and see if, for example, in this example, we are showing a phase shifter or a flow control device that will push power from 240 to 500 kV. Will that address some other issues that will appear on the 240 kV network if we don't put that device in? So we'll look at the holistic picture. And Peter talked about, for example, generation curtailment, but there could be other benefits. So we'll capture all that benefit, the bigger picture. when we are justifying this flow control device shown in shaded area. But as for the 95%, I think it's a system-wide thing, but system-wide criteria. But again, for this particular example, we will be looking at all the aspects, the duration curtailment, and if it's delaying some future development on the 240 kV, if it's optimizing and making use of the capacity available on the 500 kV, all of these will, reducing losses, for example, all of these will come into play before we put forward a case for any additional piece of infrastructure. Hope that helps.
Yeah, and add to what Anna is trying to say, there are other potential benefits that can be captured as part of criteria number 3. Some of them could involve, for example, loss reductions, and some of them can involve deferring other infrastructure. So this is just one example of how criteria number 3 could be used, but there are other benefits that we can provide through the use of criteria number 3 as well.
Does that answer your question, Horst, or is there anything else you'd like to follow up with?
Well, it does help. And I mean, I expected that the ISO takes a more holistic view of the benefits of this phase shifting transformer. It still doesn't really tell me how the ISO applies the 95% criteria in order to determine whether something falls under criteria 1 to look at the curtailment level or constrained level under N-1 conditions, under abnormal conditions. So that would be helpful to understand. So, but yeah, maybe that's something to take away. I don't know if that's on the fly here.
Okay. Uh-huh. We'll take that away.
Thank you, Horst. So we have a couple other questions typed into the Q&A. I'll just start going through those ones. From Luis Pando. Could you explain how the criteria is changing from the current one and how the ISO plans to implement these changes?
Okay. So hi, Luis. So I think the criteria that we're trying to clarify here, what our intention is to try to apply them going forward. Our intention is that once we file our compliance filing with the commission, then these criteria will be in effect in a way. However, I also want to stress that since all the criteria I mentioned today are really speaking to the core of ISO's planning mandate. So in a way, the criteria isn't new because they are all baked in or integrated with our current planning practice. So these, what the AUC's decision really give to the ISO is the opportunity to share these practices with the stakeholders and formalize them in a submission. So overall, I think that answers your question.
Perfect, thank you, Peter. We have a question from Megan Gill, and I believe this question is on the following example. So she says, in this example, could you please explain what happens when there is a fourth generator that requests connection in the same location after the facilities are built? Would they share the costs of the project?
Yeah, in general, Megan, thank you for the question. In general, given that this is considered a portion of the connection facility, then any additional generators that's come in will be expected to also contribute to the cost of the coordinated connection facility. Implementation-wise, the ISO will look to find a way to capture that situation so that everybody will contribute in a fair and efficient manner.
Excellent, thank you. Next question from Aaron Crush. Since system developments typically take longer to implement than customer developments, what happens to the generator causing the N-0 violation? Do they have to wait for the system reinforcement before they are allowed to connect?
Okay, that's a great question, Aaron. So in general, as we mentioned that for anything that's generation driven, for generator that causes n minus zero condition on the system as a whole, and it's not our intention to be a roadblock for that particular system, for that particular generation development. So the thought is that we would continue to enable and support that particular generator development. However, at the same time, the ISO will quickly initiate a system project, even though it takes longer, given that we need to respect our ISO sufficiencies, sufficiently certain generation criteria. We will have to lag the generator development by a number of years. However, we do not want to stop the generator development. So what we will show is that we will demonstrate to the commission that we do anticipate a small amount of generation congestion on the system. In that situation, we will file an application with the AUC to highlight that congestion. However, that congestion expected to last for a number of years, a few years only, while the generators can operate to a certain degree while waiting for the system development to complete in the next couple of years or so.
That's great, thank you. So another question here from Jim Ripon. Would the principles criteria showcased in these examples also apply to the telecom discipline as well?
I think we'll have to look at the situation, the telecom situation. At this time, it's very difficult to draw parallels between this electrical examples that Peter is showing and the telecom. So we'll have to look at the situation from in the telecom space and then make a decision.
Well, thank you, Ada. And one last question in here so far from Erica Goddard. How are these criteria impacted by DERS? How are these criteria impacted by non-wire solutions?
So I'll take that, Peter. If there is an impact of DERS on the transmission system, then that will be the drivers, the need for building transmission or planning transmission. And so that's how the connection is done. If DERS are in sufficient volume, they may have an impact on the transmission system, and then these criteria will come into play. How are these criteria impacted by non-wire solutions? So we have given examples of transmission lines, but it could be a non-wire solution as well as when we identify the need and we are looking at alternatives, and if the non-wire solution is the appropriate alternative to go with, then it will be the non-wire solution that will be put in place instead of the transmission line. Peter, you want to add anything? Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Ada.
Okay. Another question here from Aaron Crush. Is there any criteria to eventually convert the coordinated solution to become system if there is X number of customers using the coordinated solution?
Yeah, that's a great question. Basically, is there a number that would convert connection facility into a system facility? In general, we are not foreseeing a number. It's to change the status. Ultimately, as you see on the diagram that's currently on the screen here, overall, it's there to facilitate the connection of these three or four or five generators. And in that portion of the facility still remain as a connection nature. They are not meant for network unless there's a wholesale change in the overall system configuration that will still remain in place. So we are not looking at converting the facilities into system cost or systemize that portion of a connection facility, only looking at the number of customers.
Okay. Thank you. So one more Q&A here from Richard. It seems that from this presentation, the ISO's view is if a generator wants to connect, they will build TX to it and incur system costs that loads have to pay. Why does the ISO not incent the generator to connect where there is an abundance of TX available? And we know there is an abundance of TX available in Alberta.
I'll take that, Peter. So Richard, as you know, the TDEC requires us to integrate generation, provide them with reasonable access. So by regulation, we have to accommodate the forecasted generation. That's a role, that's a mandate, and we have a regulatory obligation to do so. But as you know very well, we have over the years provided more information to the market participants as to where the capacities are. We have provided maps with capacity, grid maps with capacities. We have provided information on where they can go and connect. And our long-term plan also talks about the state of affairs on the grid. So the market participants have a lot of information to make their decision on where to connect. But at the same time, please keep in mind that it is our regulatory obligation to accommodate the forecasted generation and connect and provide them with reasonable access to the grid.
Thank you, Ada. Another question here from Aaron Crush. If one of the projects is a load project, would that change the outcome?
The simple answer will be no. So those are still three different, those are three SASRs. As long as the coordinated connection facility is the most efficient approach to meet the need of the three or four or five, it can be done whether they are all generator or load or a mixture of generation and load.
Wonderful, thank you. Another one from Richard Penn. Does the obligation say how quickly the generator must be connected?
Well, as you know, we plan the transmission system based on a forecast, and then we also work with the market participants to meet their timelines. But at the same time, and you know it well, Richard, that we have been adding due diligence. We have been providing milestones to make sure that we only move forward when there's a need to do so, by only spend the big money when it's really needed. So we have been adding milestones to our need applications as an added due diligence. So we have put in a lot of checks and balances in our planning process to make sure that we only move forward when there's a real need to do so.
And Richard, Dennis here. As you're well aware, obviously this is a energy market in this province, and so that market needs to work through competition. And therefore, when generators want to connect to our system, it's our responsibility to provide a timely connection in order for them to participate and compete in the market. And that has gone through, as you are well aware, the regulations and our obligations from a congestion perspective. Now, as it relates to your statement that it appears we're just building transmission just to, at the cost of load customers, just to connect generators. Well, in that context, we obviously are obligated to connect generators in the province. And the example that's up here, I think, as Peter and Ada have gone through, is this is about trying to find a coordinated solution that's less costly to those generators that are connecting. And so if we're looking at a coordinated solution, we would expect that coordinated solution to be a lower net cost. And as Ada and Peter indicated, that cost would be borne by those generators, so it wouldn't be a system cost. In this situation, what we're talking about here is having the opportunity to coordinate and potentially reduce costs to those market participants that want to connect. So hopefully that provides additional context to the questions.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. So I think that clears out questions that were in the Q&A. I know, Horst, you had your hand raised. I don't know if you still have something that you'd like to ask or share. Feel free to pop your hand up again and I'll unmute you, or you can unmute. Maybe his question was addressed already. So no other outstanding questions on my side. And no hands raised.
Okay. Well, if there are no other questions, then on behalf of the ISO, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for your participation, for your excellent questions and comments. There's a poll that Jennifer talked about, and then there's a comment metrics that is already posted on our website, right, Jennifer? So please, please provide your comments on the comment metrics. And with that, we come to the end of this this session. Please take a moment to fill in the poll. Thank you very much.
Thank you.